With that, I think I'll call council to order. You have an agenda in front of you. Are there any changes, deletions, additions to the agenda that anyone would like? If not, I'd like a motion to approve the agenda as circulated. Council Waterman moving, Council Prelick seconding. All in favor? It's unanimous. I'd like to call on Stan Mason, who is the president of Unify Energy, and a friend of Queens, to come forward and bring us up to date on the Unify project. Stan? Mr. Mason has kindly circulated his printout of his slides in advance, so that will be very helpful when we come to ask questions. So.
All the great thinking.
Do we want to turn out a light or two? Can you get them down there, Mike? That better? Thank you.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mayor Clark, councilors, and everybody else for having me here this morning to give you an update. How do we do this so it's just
large
slides? What's that?
Oh, you want the large window.
Yeah.
So you have
a slideshow. Here we are. Just what's it? From the beginning, I think this is it here. There we go.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. And it's just,
yeah.
Okay. So I'm here to give an update on our project that we're going to be doing here on your on the Bowater site. So there's two main companies I'm going to talk about. There's other companies that are going to come up, but the two main companies, one is Unify. Now Unify is the engineering company that's doing the development work, and Unify hopes to do other storage projects in the future. And then the company that we've set up called the Liverpool Wind Energy Storage Project Incorporated, and that's the project that we're doing here in Liverpool. So like I just said, I'm jumping ahead of myself, but Unify is set up as to be a turnkey energy storage developer. So this is our first project that we're going to do, and we hope to do other ones after this. We've partnered with Lightsail Energy. Lightsail Energy is a venture capital company down in California. They are the developers of RAES, which is regenerative air energy storage. I'm going to refer to it as compressed air storage through this. It just makes it easier for me. I'm a Nova Scotianer. It's hard for me to come up with these big words. We established this partnership back in 2014 with Lightsail. Lightsail is Daniel Fong. You might have read about her. She was here once. Just briefly to talk about how this system works, or how the storage system works, and what the magic sauce is in this system. People have been compressing air and storing it in tanks as a way of storing energy for a long time. But the round trip efficiency is for the systems they have in place now is down around the 30-40%. Some store in tanks, the smaller systems, and then other systems actually store it in salt caverns or something that store the energy. And like I said, it's very inefficient, an inefficient way of storing energy. What Lightsail have come up with is a way of increasing that efficiency. And basically what they do is during the expansion process, which is the bottom piston there, the motor runs the piston, in the compression process, when they compress the air, they inject a fine mist into the air, where a lot of the inefficiency is during compression, you create a lot of heat, and during expansion, it gets very cold. So that loss of heat and it getting cold, it makes it very inefficient. So they inject a fine mist, and which captures the heat, which keeps the air cool, so you can compress it. You can put more air into the tank, and then it captures that water and stores it in the orange thing in the heat storage. So it captures it, the heat in that storage system. So now you have your heat captured and you have your air captured in your tank. And so when you want your energy back, you just run your air back through your compressor, which is now an expanding system, and it runs your generator as a motor, creating electricity, and then it puts the heat back into the air by injecting another fine mist into the air when it comes back through. So it sounds very simple, but nobody's ever come up with it before, and LightSail are looking to get efficiencies of this system of upwards around 80%. I'm going to talk about efficiency a little more later, but that's a mark that they're hoping for. So basically what they're saying is that for every kilowatt hour that goes into the motor, into storing air into a cylinder, when it comes back through, that motor will produce 0.8 of a kilowatt back out. 0.8 of a kilowatt hour. The other points here I'm going to talk about very quickly is just comparing this to other storage systems. So when I say low capital cost, again, that's relative to other storage systems. Storage systems like batteries. Batteries is the main competition that's out there. And they have things like flywheels and a few other little things that are trying to store energy. So it does have a low capital cost compared to other systems. Compressors have been around for a long time. People have been using air compressors for years and years. And it's a very robust system, and it has a long life cycle. So we're designing this to be 20 years plus on the design side. It's a modular on both the power and on the energy side of this, which means that you can get various size motors and compressors. So if you want to run a half a megawatt system, you can. If you want to run a full megawatt, you get two of them. And so it's you can stack them depending on what you need. And on the power side, the amount of storage, the amount of tanks that you want, how quickly you want the energy in, how quickly you want the energy out. So it's very flexible. The other thing, next point is very, when I say flexible and agile, so you can ramp it up and ramp it down very quickly, as quickly as you'd like. So it's some systems are difficult to do that, but this is very flexible. The other good thing about this is there's no chemicals after its life cycle. The only things that we're using here is air and water, so it's very inert, very environmentally friendly. So why storage? Well, it's very important for storage to get a large amount of renewable energy onto the grid. Renewable energy is intermittent. Wind energy only supplies energy when it's blowing, and it's variable. If it's a little bit of wind, it can be the capacity is all over the map. But you need a fairly windy day to get full power output from your wind turbines. So wind turbines and it's unpredictable. You don't know when the wind's going to blow. With solar, you only have power during the day and only if the sun's shining. So again, very irregular. The other big thing in Nova Scotia here that's going to come online soon is tidal. Tidal is predictable, but there are 4 slack tides a day, and it ramps up and down 4 times a day. And that time changes by 45 minutes if anybody fishes or does whatever. You understand that, and so it's always changing, and it's a variable nature as well. So, and we need power in Nova Scotia. It's pretty steady. We It drops down at night. There's pretty steady load during the day. We have a couple peaks. When everybody gets up in the morning, puts their toaster on and has a shower, there's a spike in the morning. And then when we come home for supper, there's another little spike then. So there's a time when we need power, and then Mother Nature gives us power on the renewable side when she feels like it. So right now in Nova Scotia, we've maxed out. We can't put any more renewable energy onto the system. When South Canoe went online here a couple of weeks ago, one night, it was a warm night, windy, nobody had their air conditioner on, nobody was watching TV late. The renewable energy spiked at 50% of the power supplied to Nova Scotia Power came from renewable energy. Nova Scotia Power doesn't like to see anything above 30%. If it normally gets above 30%, they start curtailing renewable energy. So they start shutting off wind farms, which is not like the wind farm owners don't like that because they don't get paid. So we're at that point right now. So we have to figure out a way to if we want to reduce our carbon footprint or reduce the amount of coal we use in Nova Scotia, we got to figure out a way putting on more renewable energy, and that's with storage. We have to be able to store it when we don't need it and get it onto the grid when we need it. So that's the main reason why we're doing storage here. And again, the second point there is that it increases the value. Like if you can supply your product to the customer when they need it, it's more valuable. If they don't need it and it just becomes a nuisance, you are there to shut it down or they try to give it away. They say, New Brunswick, do you want it? It's free, you can take it, or we have to shut it down. So it's a nuisance. It's a nuisance to Nova Scotia Power, and they don't want it onto the grid. It makes it unstable. So WEC is a wind energy converter. So if you see that up there, that just means wind turbines. So it's just going to be able to increase the number of wind turbines we can put onto the Nova Scotia grid. Okay, here's a project here. I'm going to get to the update soon. I thought I'd just a little information on what we're doing here first, but I'm getting to the project here. So this is Google Map, a fresh shot of Bowater there with some of the cleanup work that's been done. So on that site, we're gonna have our demonstration project. It is an R&D site. It's been classified as an R&D site, which is great for us. This is going to be one of the first projects that Lightsail is going to do, and we're really excited about this project going here. It's because of the ComFit structure, we're going to be able to do a lot of R&D. We're going to be able to test a bunch of things. We're going to be able to set this up as a demonstration thing where we'll be able to bring our clients here, show them how this works. There's a lot of pluses to this site, and I'll get to that in a little bit when I hit a few more slides. But it's going to be just a super site for a lot of reasons. And it is going to be a commercial energy storage facility. Besides being a demonstration, besides being an R&D platform, we have a 20-year contract to supply power to Nova Scotia Power underneath the ComFit. So we will be running this for at least 20 years, hopefully a lot longer than that. And like I said, it's a ComFit project. I think everybody knows what ComFit is, but it's a community feed-in tariff. So this was something the NDP government set up a few years ago. It allowed communities, or community entities, to be awarded ComFit projects, which gives them a fixed rate for their power for 20 years. So it allows Nova Scotians or Nova Scotian communities to invest in renewable energy. Keep the, if I get on my ComFit horse for a bit, it allows Nova Scotians to own projects. Most of the renewable energy projects that are in the province, Pubnico down here and the big, like, South Canoe, it's owned by big corporations, and most of the money, if not all of it, leaves the province. But our ConFit projects, a lot of the money does stay here. So, what is the project? We're going to install 4.7 megawatts of wind turbines up on the hill. And that's two turbines. They're 2.35 megawatt wind turbines. Our storage system is a half a megawatt storage, which means it can consume a half a megawatt of power at any given time, and it can store up to 4 megawatt hours. So it takes 8 hours at our system running at full capacity to fully charge the system. And to discharge, it's going to take 8 hours to discharge back to the system at full rate. But we can vary that. We can do all kinds of different things. Now our ConFit is for 3.6 megawatts. So that is the maximum amount of power that we can put out on the grid. So what makes this project a little different than a normal storage project? And I mentioned storage earlier, where the benefit of storage is to capture the energy when you don't need it and put it onto the grid when it's required. But we're sort of using a ConFit to show how the storage system works, which basically what a ConFit is they tell you what the maximum amount of energy you can put out onto the distribution system at any given time, and that's 3.6 megawatts for us. So that means when the wind starts to blow and it gets up to our 4.7, or it gets up above 3.6, we can't put any more out onto the grid, so we have to store it. So after it gets up past 3.6, we start storing it. And we store it and we hold it until the wind dies down. And when it drops down below 3.6, then we can dump it out onto the grid. So basically all we're doing is playing with Nova Scotia Power's guidelines. We're not really doing the full, or doing what a storage system should do. We hope to change that as years go by. We hope to change that as years go by working with Nova Scotia Power, but for now we're stuck by these rules. Sorry?
So you can do both at the same time?
Both.
Give power to Nova Scotia Power and do your...
Yes, yes. So I'll go to the next slide here. And so so basically what's going to happen, we're going to have it up here where the wind turbines are. It shows the two stars at the top, and that's up behind Nickerson Pond there. We're going to install the wind turbines there, and we're going to bring down on the dashed red, we're going to bring down the power line right down to where our storage system is there. So we're going to have a black box kind of thing where that power line is going to go into this black box. There's going to be a line that's going to go to our storage, and there's going to be a line that goes with Nova Scotia Power. So what this black box is going to do is when the power is coming down from the wind turbines, until it hits 3.6 megawatts, it's just going to go right out onto the grid. As soon as it gets above 3.6, it's going to peel some of it off to store our tanks. As soon as our tanks are full, it's going to curtail our wind turbines to 3.6, or it's going to slow them down. It's going to feather the blades so it will only produce 3.6, and then it will go out onto the grid. As soon as the wind dies down below 3.6 megawatts, then our compressor station, our storage station, is going to turn into an expander. It's going to let the air expand, produce energy, and put that back out onto the grid. So the yellow line that you see, so the solid red line is the distribution. Up where the yellow line and the red come together up in the corner, that's where your substation is. So that's where the main power line from Cape Breton. From all their coal power plants, come right there to that point there, and it supplies, in the substation, it supplied power on the solid red line to your community here. So that's the distribution system, and it supplies power to all of your houses. And then the yellow was higher voltage that they bled off that came down to feed the mill. The reason I leave the yellow line on here is that creates that's offering an opportunity to a company like us or somebody else that may want to come in and use that power line. It's not being used now. It's an asset that's stranded. We would like to think that there's an opportunity here to have a very large storage system here at the site, that your wind turbines could be somewhere else, and your energy could come in for storage during the night here, and then use that distribution line to feed it back into the grid. So we think that that's potential, and that's kind of why I leave that there as something that we're looking at doing. If you look at what's going on in other parts of the world, when they shut down coal-fired plants, you have a very similar system. You have this huge power line coming to a coal-fired plant. You shut down the coal-fired plant, you dismantle it, but you have the stranded asset of your power line, which is very expensive to put in, and it's stranded. And so they're using that for Google and places like that are using it to put on that facility. They'll build their storage plant to store data because they have this asset that they can use. But I'm off on a tangent here, but there you go.
And that distribution substation, that's also taking the power off the dams, runs into that distribution substation as well?
That from the power from the dams, it goes into the solid red line is distribution. It goes into the transmission system.
Okay.
So if some of it could come down into that substation to feed this, or some could, you know, it all depends
which way
it goes.
Which way they should send it.
Which, it's, from that. It goes, yeah. With, energy goes wherever it's needed.
Yeah.
So if you're producing more power there than you need for your community, it's going to go elsewhere. So this is our spot. We're pretty proud of this spot. We like it. It's the old mixing room. It's you have to look past past the dust. No, you know, it is. It's we're excited about this for a bunch of reasons. It's front and center. It's the old mixing room. It's probably one of the oldest parts that's left. So it's nice to think of us coming in with our new technology into an older part of it. They cleaned it up a little more since then, and we're working on what we actually need. But it's got a good solid floor. We have compressors that's going to go in there, and it makes a little bit of noise, so it's going to be it's got good thick walls and stuff, so it's going to be a good spot. So that's where we are. Some of you may know about the old mixing room. So this kind of shows you a bit about the size of our installation on the storage side is. So in the mixing room, which I just talked about, we have two light sail units, the small little boxes down here, and that's supposed to represent two 20-foot containers. So it's going to come in two 20-foot containers. We're going to have two compressor units, and that's going to fit into the mixing room. So that's going to do all the magic compressing and capturing the heat and all of that. And so with the heat that we capture, we're going to need some tanks. So on the far right is the water storage tanks. So the orange ones represent hot water, the blue ones cold water, and the gray is mixing. And that represents, they represent 40-foot containers. So that's how much water we're going to have to have. And it's, once we have the water, it's reused. So it's water that we treat. And so it's we just, a little bit of makeup water every now and then, but so it's, we're not consuming that much water all the time. It's a one-time thing. Once the tanks are filled, we're good to go. And on the other side, we have our air storage. So in each one of those containers, we'll arrive. There'll be five containers, and they'll each have four tanks in them, and they're 40 feet long, or 3 feet in diameter. So in each one of those tanks, stores about a megawatt hour of energy. So we're storing 5 megawatt hours of energy. So that's kind of gives you an idea of how big this system is. And this here is the substation down at the mill. And again, just talking about the constraints of the grid that we talked about earlier. And with the storage, we're going to be able to extend our capacity by about 30% with the storage here. So 30% more energy is going to be, we're going to get on the grid. The thing that I wanted to touch on earlier is one thing that the light sail unit is looking for, or installations that we're looking for, past Liverpool, is someplace that can offer up waste heat. And when I mean waste heat, there's a lot of places that have waste steam, pulp mills. If any of you worked in the pulp mill here, you probably saw a lot of places that were just blowing off steam, and some people blowing off steam. But
A lot of those.
But we don't need steam. We need return condensate, anything around 70, 80, 90 degrees Celsius, so very low-grade steam. Down here, because of the Brooklyn power plant, there's a lot of steam. You got a lot of, it's not waste steam, but a lot of steam that's available. So we're going to be tapping off, we're going to be testing our unit without steam. So we're going to be showing customers, we'll be able to turn the steam off. We'll be able to show customers that without steam, you're going to get this kind of efficiency, and we're hoping that it's going to be 60-65%. And then with waste heat, using a little bit of steam, injecting it into the air before it gets into the expansion stage to even boost it a little higher. By doing that, our round-trip efficiency, we hope to see 80 to some of us think 90% and higher return efficiency. So that's another big plus of being here. We have that opportunity to have the waste heat and to be able to show our customers different operating scenarios. Again, it's just only used during the expansion process of when you're recovering your energy. The other thing we're going to be testing here is cold climate operations. We were hoping climate change was going to change things, but if last year was any indication, we tried to plow that road last year to get our Met Tower up, and boys, we had a lot of snow. But so we're going to test the cold climate operations. This picture here is from our tower looking down at Nickerson Pond. So so that our tower is up in place there now. So there's things that, you know, your water and everything has to be outside. You got to make sure things don't freeze. When you store your energy, you're in a stagnant time frame waiting until the energy is required. So if water's sitting around, you don't want stuff to freeze. So that's kind of some of the things that we're going to be working on and figuring out when we do our project here. Normally when you do a wind project and you just stick up a Met Tower, a tubular tower, it's 60 meters in the air, you measure the wind regime for a year, and it gives you an idea of how much energy you're going to get from your wind turbines. In this case, we had to do the same thing, but we, instead of putting up a Met Tower, we installed a permanent tower, and it's going to be a weather station. And what we're going to do with this weather station, and it just takes what I talked about earlier to another level. You want to be able to store the energy when you don't need it and get it back onto the grid when you do need it. The problem is, if you don't know what energy you're going to get overnight or what energy you're going to get at the time that you want to store it, you're kind of in the dark. So if you can predict weather 6 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours ahead of time with a weather station, and there's some guys that do this very well, so, you can decide whether to dump the energy you have now, because it's going to be windy at night and you can store it for the next day, dump it for the supper time, whatever. Or you may want to, if there's no wind at all, you can make the decision to buy power from Nova Scotia Power in the middle of the night when they want to sell it. There may be wind turbines elsewhere in the province that they may want to shut down. You go, well, wait a minute, I'll take it. And you store it and then shift it. Shift the power, deliver it to them in the morning rush hour or whatever. So we're working with people that are supplying the service with Nova Scotia Power now. They supply this service for airports to let them know weather patterns coming in and when they should be shutting things down and for a bunch of other people. So we're working with them. We have this weather station installed here now, and we're going to put another one down at one of our other projects down in Wedgeport, just so we'll be able to do some predicting and offer that service as well along with our storage. So it's another, again, R&D location. It's another thing that we're working on. It's an exciting thing to work on. So here we get to where we are. Gives you the timeline. We're in this period where people from Liverpool go, well, what are you doing? We don't see anything. So we are doing stuff. It's a lot of stuff going on. We installed our Met Tower early this year, so we're collecting data now. The weather station's up. If anybody's gone up that road and around, you'll see it there. Our wind turbines will be close by. You can see it from the road, the tower in a couple places. We have started the engineering to incorporate light sails design into what we're doing here. We hope to have that completed by Q1 of 2016. Q2 next year, we're going to start work down here, and that will start with some site preparation for the storage unit at the facility. And we'll also start clearing some trees for the wind turbines and the road for the power line coming down. There is a power line that goes up to Nickerson's Pond now. I think your water system is up there. So there is a power line that goes up there now. So we'll be either piggybacking on those poles or upgrading those poles to come from that point down. Q3, that's when we will be starting the actual real construction work. The civil work for the storage, we'll be working on that, and then and all the full electrical work running the power lines and everything that's involved with that. And we will be putting the rest of our roads and our foundations in for the turbines and getting ready for the turbines. And just if I jump back to Q1, we'll get into that in the next slide, but that's when we'll be ordering our turbines. It takes 6 months, so we'll order our turbines the first of the year for them delivered in Q4, where we will install the turbines, we'll install the turbines in Q4, and they'll be commissioned in Q4. So the end of next year, the wind turbines will be up and running, and that part of the project will be commissioned, so we will be putting power out into the grid and starting to make money. And again, we'll be putting in 4.7 megawatts, but until the storage system is in there, as soon as we get 3.6, we have to curtail. We have to ramp our turbines back, and so they just produce 3.6. And at the second quarter of 2007, the storage systems are going to arrive. We'll install them and commission them, and so everything will be up and running. Our plan is Q3 2017 will be in commercial operation of both the storage and the wind turbines. Next is us engineers tend to forget this sometimes, but we need money. So for the two companies, for Unify, the engineering to get from here to meet the timelines we're talking about, we need about $1.5 million. So we have some funding from Enercon, and I'm going to talk about Enercon a little bit later. Enercon is a turbine manufacturer. I'm going to talk to them in the next slide when we talk about partners. They have, they're excited with this project. They think that there's a good opportunity to work with us on other projects. They have supplied some funding for Unify. Alberta Innovate, that sounds like a weird one, but we were successful. Alberta has a big problem. We have a problem here with our energy storage. Alberta has even a bigger problem. Almost all of their power comes from coal, and they tried to do wind, but in Alberta, the wind blows at night. And like I talked about, most of the time it blows at night. So the power is being supplied when they don't need it. And so they need to figure out, if they're going to start to slow down on their burning coal, they need to figure out the renewable energy aspect. So they need storage. So they went out to nationwide or worldwide for applications for people who can help them. So we said, We threw in an application. We said, our technology here that we're doing, we think is applicable. They received 60 applications of storage companies around the world. They awarded 5 contracts. 4 of them were inside Alberta companies, and they only awarded 1 outside of Alberta, and that was to us. They think that this is potential to solve their problem, and so they've funded us to make sure that that we're going to be able to get this done. And a couple of others. Since I prepared this a week or so ago, we have 2 offers, 2 more offers. that we have term sheets that we are hoping to sign off on those by this Friday, which will give us the $1.5 million. So that Unify is well-funded. We never thought we were going to have a problem with that, but so our funding is complete there. So for the project down here, so for the project, we're going to need $14 million. It's a $14 million project. So Watts is the qualifying applicant. So Watts, what Watts does, it raises money for its projects. Watts already has four projects it's completed here in Nova Scotia, one down in Shea Harbour, in New Glasgow, down in Barrington, and down in Wedgeport. We have two more on the go right now. Down in Ketch Harbour we're doing a project, and in Porter's Lake we're doing a project. And the last project that Watts will be doing will be here, which will be its seventh project. And seven. And with the total installed capacity after that of about 27 megawatts. So a good little success story for a Nova Scotia company. There's right now we have almost 300 investors. We hope to come down here and encourage some of you fine people to invest later on in the fall and the spring. But I'll be down here talking about the opportunity and the investment opportunity in Watts. So we hope to raise about $3 million. Of the $14 million, Watts hopes to raise $3 million to do the project here. The rest of the money, or most of the money, will come from debt financing. We've been very successful in raising debt for these projects. Cost of money is really low right now, which is great. So we hope to raise around the $10 million. Because of the CONFIT, because the contract is with Nova Scotia Power, it's relatively easy to get the debt financing. So our plan is to have that closed by February, and then others. There have been people that have shown interest to invest privately, NovaCorp being one of them. There's some other Nova Scotia investors that have invested in the light sail technology, and they're looking to invest. So if the numbers are right, then they will come on board. And so we really don't see an issue on the financing side of things. So, and just to give you a little bit of information, the revenue that we expect to generate from the wind data we've collected so far, and the information we have on our storage and how well we think that's going to work, we expect to see revenues of around $2 to $2.25 million a year come from the project. So this is just talking a bit about our partners, Enercon. We picked Enercon as the turbine supplier. Basically, they picked us when they heard that we were doing this project. Enercon is probably one of the lead. They're not the biggest company in the world, but they're probably the leader with respect to R&D. They see that they need storage. For them to sell more turbines, to put more turbines in the marketplace, they got to store the energy. That's the only way that they're going to be able to do it. So. They're big on the small wind farms, the community wind farms, one or two. And if you're going to do this, you need a storage component. So they've been involved in a few storage projects before, but on the tail end. Somebody's doing a storage project, we need a wind turbine, they'll call Enercon and get a turbine. They're on the right at the very start. They're helping us. They've offered up technology, their engineers that we can talk to, and they're supplying a little more of the scope than just turbines. So they're quite excited about that. We're excited about having them on board. They're German made. They make a lot of the components in Canada now. The towers and the blades come from Quebec. But it's I want to say Cadillac of turbines, but it's the Mercedes, I guess. So we're excited about having them. Dalhousie University, when I was talking through the presentation, I talked about efficiencies and how well it's going to do. We can't verify or certify those numbers. Dalhousie is going to come do that for us. They're going to be the body that says, we've looked at this, we've tested it, it's 48% or 94% efficient. We've worked with Dalhousie, they've helped us. with things in the past and supplying us with their best graduates. And so we're pretty excited about working with Dalhousie. There's got a good crew there. Eon is Eon Electric. Our guys that do our development work. They were the ones that put up our weather station. They're going to be managing the road construction. They're going to be managing Enercon. They've done our environmental assessment for the project here. They were the Enercon, or not Enercon, Acciona, the turbines that were for South Canoe. They helped Acciona. They were the guys on the ground here, make sure that those turbines were put in properly. They have the maintenance contract to look after the South Canoe wind farm for the next 5 years. Acciona has dragged them down to Texas. They're on a project down in Texas that's four times the size of South Canoe. So they're busy, they're growing. It's good to have a Nova Scotia company part of that. Watts Wind, I talked about them. They're going to be raising the equity. They were the qualifying applicant for the CONFIT. So that's that. So they're, like I said, almost 300 investors in Nova Scotia. So it's a Nova Scotia investment group that are part of this. Inovacorp, potential investor in both Unify and the project. They were very instrumental in getting us hooked up, starting down here. And Inovacorp was involved in the Bowater plant, and everything resolved there. And the last one we have there is the Nova Scotia government releasing the land for the wind turbines from them. Department of Energy, Department of Environment, we have to work with to get this project done. So that's where we are, and I think that is it. Just any questions, if anybody has any questions on it.
Thank you, Stan. It's always fascinating. And every time one hears your presentation, you add a little more.
Yeah.
Whet our appetites a little further.
Yeah.
Are there any questions of Stan? Deputy Mayor Norman.
This morning I heard on the news that the province is closing the book on CONFIT, mm-hmm. which means they're not accepting any new broad ones except case by case. So yours is a go.
Yes.
Because they said the more they take, then they suddenly, there's too much power, and Nova Scotia Power will have to put their rates up, etc. So this storage, if this works, then more wind energy could be had in the province.
Correct.
If this storage works. So
correct.
It's important that this storage works so that we can have more wind and get away from the coal.
Correct. I read the article today, and they're saying that the average CONFIT cost is 14 cents per kilowatt hour. And that's what they were saying, the average cost. But they said, so that's going to increase our rates. But they said we can get cost for 6 cents. So, you know, our cost is going to go up. The 14 cents, and what we're getting for here is 13 cents, but 14 cents is because there's, for small wind and a few other things, tidal, they're giving a higher rate, that's why it's pumped up. But for the 14 cents, that's for 20 years. There's no escalator. Our contract is fixed. And, you know, when they talk about it, so they're dumping us in a category, they're saying that this is a fuel cost. So they're comparing us to the price of coal. So what's the price of coal going to be in 20 years? And what's not in there? And they have a good point. They say, you know, whether we burn coal or not, we still have to have our plant. So they're not including the cost of their plant. So and those plants have to be shut down. They're mandated to be shut down. We won't, right now, unless they build new coal-fired plants, in 20 years, they'll all be closed down. So if they have to build a new coal-fired plant, the ones they have now, they were basically given by the province, you know, when they privatized. So if they have to build a new coal fire plant and they have to use, you know, our 13 cents pays for our wind turbines, and like I said, it's fixed for 20 years. So if you look at a snapshot of today, if they're comparing what they're paying us for the price of coal, like as a Nova Scotianer, I'd rather pay 13 cents to now, knowing it's going to stay for 20 years, than to buy coal from Venezuela, and we don't know how many people are dying down there for that coal, and bring it to Nova Scotia and burn it here. I don't know. That's I read the article this morning too, and I'm a little annoyed. but I mean, it's what you read, and a lot of people read if they don't know the facts. It's hard to.
It's how they present.
It's how they present. Yeah.
Councilor McLeod.
Dan, your presentation is very informative, but it kind of boggles your mind about how these things work.
For sure.
Wind energy storage, is this an innovation by Daniel Fong that nobody else has ever thought of?
When our project is called wind energy storage, only because our source of energy is wind,
yeah.
And we're storing it.
Yeah.
It's the technology, the storage technology. The way that she's increasing the efficiency of the storage system.
Okay.
Like I said, people have been storing energy using compressors for a long time. You know, when we pump up our tires in our car, in theory we're storing energy.
Right.
You know, by because it's in there. But so she's just increasing the efficiency to make it a viable option to store. We have to figure out a way to store energy. You know, if we want to get off fossil fuel, we have to store our renewable energy because it's intermittent. So if we can find a reliable way, a cost-effective way to store it, then we can put more renewable energy into our system.
So once the technology is firm and you know how if it's going to work and how efficient it is, and then you have a market for that somewhere?
Yes.
So the market for the use of the energy is there?
Yes.
What benefit, I know it's an innovation center at the site, and you know you folks are using it in partnership with others. Once that technology is achieved and you know and it goes to a commercialized state, then where are all these things manufactured? Will that be a benefit to us here, or would you just move somewhere else?
No, we're talking to a bunch of different people. One of our main things, and when I talked about Eon Wind Electric as the group that are looking after wind farms now, we see them evolving into the group that will install and maintain these things all over the place and be the engineering crowd that designs them for them. You have to integrate these systems into people's, you just don't say here's one and go plug it in, we have to integrate it in. And so we'll have to hire a bunch of Nova Scotians to do that. We're up to 35 people now on the technical side for Eon, and if we're doing the storage, we just see the expanding on that. So that's one thing that we hope to do in Nova Scotia is keep those great jobs here. There's things that are going to have to be manufactured here. We don't have any control over that. You know, the tanks are made of fiberglass. There's a lot of people that are very interested. There's the technology in Nova Scotia here down the South Shore. There's a lot of people that make high level fiberglass stuff. So we hope to be able to bring some of that there.
There's opportunities.
We talked to the government all along. Where we hope to bring some of the manufacturing here. We can't guarantee it.
No.
You know, you have places in the world. If in order to make a change. A big change. Our plans are to install maybe 10 of these a year, but LightSail's plan is to install tens of thousands of these a year. If you're going to be able to make a real change in the world, big things have to happen.
But the current situation is you are employing folks for
yes.
this project.
Yes.
Local
yes.
And
the intent of this here is to have this facility because of the nature of it. There's only about 100 wind events that will get us to the 4.7 megawatts where we're going to storage. So we're only going to be running our storage system about 100 times a year. If you put it in a tidal application, there's 4 slack tides a day. So you will be running it 4 times a day or 1,000 times a year. So that's where it's very beneficial. If it's solar, if you're using it in a solar application, you could be storing it for the next morning. If the sun is the hottest in the midday, and if you need the power in the morning, you may store it every day for the next morning. So there's so it might be just once a day for so it's every application is different. But with a storage unit, you're really just helping the utility. You don't need to fix yourself with a renewable energy system. You just need to be on the grid to take the energy when they don't need it, because if there's solar and wind and tidal going into the grid, you're just going to suck that up when they don't need it and give it back to you to the utility when they do need it during the peak times. So in here we're sort of fixing it up with wind, but you really don't have to. You just have to be part of the grid, part of our electrical system, making it so that you can put more renewable energy into the system. So we hope to have, you know, units maybe in every community. And the other benefit of it that I didn't touch here is that with renewable energy, the way our grid works now, there's a bunch of big power plants. They have these big heavy lines distributing this power to all the different communities, and then they go through substations and to people. And so it's if you're going to put renewable energy, if you notice, the wind turbines are all over the place. So you don't need those big heavy lines anymore. You just have to be able to support the grid to take the energy, store it, and get it back to the community where you need it. So it's rethinking of how electricity is distributed around the province. Like I said earlier, that big line, most of the power sometimes that comes to your community is coming from the coal-fired power plants of Cape Breton, and that's where the big, if you ever drive that road, the big transmission line comes there, comes to Halifax, comes down, comes right into here. So, you know, it's what we're looking to take care of. And one thing I didn't mention, I don't think I did, the amount of power that we're going to produce is 15,000 megawatt hours of power a year. That's enough power to power about 12,000 homes. So we'll be supplying enough power for 12,000 homes every year in your community.
Council Waterman.
I really like your plan. It's well thought out and environmentally perfect. Really.
Thank you.
It's a great solution to a problem. But how do you see Muskrat Falls and things like that?
The great thing about Muskrat Falls, it's good and the bad of it.
Yeah.
The good thing about Muskrat Falls is that it's on a big dial. Like, this is the way they explain it to me. We can ramp that up and we can ramp it down however we want it. So it's going to be able to help us with, it's kind of like a big storage system, but we're mandated to take a certain amount of power. So we can only ramp it down so much. We eventually have to turn the tap on. And it's good, clean energy. But, you know, everybody talks about Muskrat Falls and about how big it is. It's only 900 megawatts. It's a lot. But Newfoundland is going to use a lot of that. We're going to. It's not as big and it's not as. You know, it's the power that we're talking about getting from that is like one coal-fired power plant or something like that.
It's
so
it'll probably just.
It's the.
It'll probably just replace one.
It will, and that's the whole idea of it. It will shut down, you know.
Council Pansy.
You know, I often think of Muskrat Falls as like taking away the bottleneck that's going out to New Brunswick.
Yeah.
We're so limited there.
Yeah.
But a couple of things I wanted to ask about. There's so many things I want to ask, but just a couple of things. Your heating, you say you're going to condensate, right? You're not going to try to use the steam, you're just going to try to use the waste steam from propane power, is that to help heat the water? Is that what you're...
No, not heat the water, it's... it is. So basically what... we're going to capture the heat during the compression stage, store it in a tank. So that, say that water gets up to 70 degrees, or whatever. So we want to inject that back into the air when it's going to be when it expands, because during expansion it gets very, very cold. So we want to inject that in to get the most energy out of the air as we can. Before the water gets injected, we will have a little heat exchanger. We'll either turn the steam on, take that 70 degree water, bring it up to 90, so you get 90 degree water being injected in, and which will increase the efficiency. So basically what we're going to be able to show people is that without waste heat, this is your efficiency, this is how well it works. With waste heat, if you can inject it in this little heat exchanger, we're going to bump it up to whatever.
The second part of that, now you store the air in the air tank.
Yes.
But when you're bringing it back out, that's when you put the water in, right? You don't
Correct.
Put water in when it goes in.
Yes, you do. That's how you capture the heat.
Yeah, well, but water doesn't, you can't compress water.
No, you can't. But, and people, so I know what you're thinking, because a lot of people ask this, if your valves are closed and you try to compress water, you're going to blow the head off your
okay.
But during compression, your valves are open, so it's not like an engine. So during compression, you're compressing the air, and you're shoving it out to the cylinder, out to the valves, and the air is being compressed. The water is in the air. It's capturing the heat during the compression. This is when I didn't get into the all the magic of it, but that's where that's where the heat really is absorbed by the water,
right.
A fine mist of water. And then when it goes out, there's a air water exchanger or air water separator that separates the water from the air. The air goes to the tanks. The waters go to the water tank, the hot water, to be stored for the return process.
Are there any other questions from council? I've got a couple, if I may. How did your environmental assessment go?
It's going very good. The only hiccup that we have is that they found some bats. Most of the bats in Nova Scotia are gone. So the amount of bats that are here are not very many. But because the bat population in Nova Scotia has been depleted so much, they've had this white nose disease. Any bats are prized now. So we're talking with the environment. That we've got special bat monitors now on our tower up there, monitoring for any movement at all with bats to see bats move around in certain conditions. So there may be times of the year that we may have to curtail our turbines for the bats. But that's the only. Everything else, it's fine. Everything is, you don't see any problems. And, you know, as far as the plant is concerned, you know, we're not looking after the environmental aspect of that. It comes with our lease. We're just looking after the environmental aspect of the wind turbines.
The other thing is just an observation. When you put up your overheads from Google Map showing the mill site,
yeah.
I was impressed by the number of cars that there were in the parking lot.
Yes.
Which obviously shows the number of people,
yeah.
And I'm saying this basically for the public and the media,
yeah.
the number of people that are working at that Bowater site or Port Mercy now,
and
people think, oh, it's just sort of shut down, but it really is humming with activity.
Yeah.
It's going to hum louder before.
Yep. Yeah.
Thanks to people like you, it's
yes.
going to hum louder.
Yeah.
Stan, thank you so much.
All right,
it's really
thank
informative.
You.
We hope you'll come back again and keep us up to date. If there's anything we can do to be supportive, please let us know. We'll do what we can.
Well, we'll let you all know when we're coming down looking for money.
Hey. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any petitions to be presented today? Going, going, gone. I'm on item 5 of the agenda. Are there any questions, comments from the public? If there are, you please give your name and rank and serial number, name and address, please.
Thank you, Mayor Clark. David Dagley, 9 Metapon Lane, Liverpool. Mayor Clark, under item 15.1, I note today that the offer to the Region of Queens from the District of Chester for a windmill operation will be discussed at Council today, and I certainly expect to find that discussion at Council very interesting. I'm wondering at this point if you could advise if there's any policy that may restrict the Region of Queens investing taxpayers' dollars in infrastructure outside of the Region of Queens?
To the best of our knowledge, there is not.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Mr.
Bill Cox,
Thank you, Bill.
I was also interested in number 15 from Florida. And I was just wondering when the CAO gives his report, if you could just add a little background as to what was the purpose of this report and why we're tying in with Chester with all these other energy projects around.
I think that will come out, Bill, during the discussion. I think you'll hear the rationale, the reasons behind it, how we got involved, how we were approached. I think all of that will come out during the discussion.
Thank you, Madam.
Yeah.
Leon Robinson, College Street, Liverpool. I'm also a question with respect to item 15. As was mentioned by Councilor Norman, the announcement by the Premier there of not getting involved in these projects and so on, renewable energy, is that going to affect this item here, their project?
I think as you listen to the discussion later on, that point will be covered, but the CAO just said, and I don't have my hearing aids in, but I think I heard him right, that the answer to your question is no, and I know that is true. So, but listen, it's going to be talked about at some length. I mean, it's going to be an interesting discussion. It's not going to lead us to a conclusion. It's going to lead us probably to further investigations and further discussions.
Thank you,
any other questions? If not, I'll continue through the agenda. And item 6 is approval of the council minutes from July the 28th. I'd appreciate a mover and a seconder. Councilor Waterman moving, Councilor Fancy seconding. All in favor? It's unanimous, and thank you. We have nothing under dangerous and unsightly premises. Under item 8, under economic development, we have a UNSM resolution, and Councilor Norman, you are the chair of economic development.
Yep, and so staff have prepared this background paper on a resolution that the Region of Queens wishes to put forward to the UNSM for their fall conference. And as you can see, there are 4 options that that are available to us. So perhaps, Jill, if you just, though we should have all read this, but basically, if you just want to basically give a brief summary and a go for it.
Certainly. Over recent council meetings, we've been talking a lot about rural internet and the deficiencies in the service and the difficulties that provides us in retaining and welcoming new businesses and new residents to the area. So building on the other activities that we've been doing around the EastLink cap and the inadequacies with the system, we decided to propose submitting a resolution to the Union of Nova Scotia Municipalities, UNSM, for their fall conference, which is in November. And so what happens there is that resolutions are submitted and they may or may not get through to the conference, but we certainly feel that it's worth mentioning that partners should work together to come up with solutions, and so our resolution is very much geared around working with province and any other partners to overcome the problems that we have in rural Queens County. And we're also recommending that the future solution has greater capacity than currently required, because as we know, technology is continually moving and the need for greater speeds and volumes of data transfer continue to evolve. Whilst we were in the process of finalising this, we got a request from the Municipality of the District of Chester, who have also done a resolution on the same subject, have called it the EastLink Broadband Cap. So they have a slightly different emphasis on their resolution. They're looking for 100% of Nova Scotia to be covered, and they haven't talked so much about the opportunity for partnerships, more talking about you know, the province taking it on alone. So we decided that it was worth putting a resolution forward as well, and, you know, there's the risk that, you know, one or other of them will go through and one won't, and there may be more from other municipal units too, but certainly, you know, we are not alone in Queens with this problem, as the whole of Southwest Nova, and so we wanted to propose, you know, a process where partners work together to come up with a solution.
I would still make that motion as attached.
Yeah, okay, good. I was going to say that we really need the motion on the floor.
I so move that the council approves the resolution respecting the provision of internet to rural areas of Nova Scotia, and that we forward same to the Union of Nova Scotia Municipalities, bracket UNSM bracket, for consideration by the membership at the 2015 Fall Conference of UNSM.
Thank you. Seconded by Councillor Fuller. Okay, so now we're legitimate again. It's not good being illegitimate. There we are. Okay, any discussion? Councillor Waterman.
Would it be better to have one with Chester rather than two separate? Or
well, I guess whichever one goes forward, we can support when it comes to the conference,
yes.
if we're there.
If I may, Your Worship,
we don't worship.
Mr. Mayor.
Sorry.
Mr. Mayor.
We received a copy of the Chester resolution. Our focus is on business. We also had the opportunity to do a little bit more work on the file than Chester did, so there's a little bit of the nuance to our resolution is the focus on business and the focus on looking collaboratively for solutions. Ultimately, both looking at the same outcome, and when the committee that reviews resolutions at UNSM go through whatever comes forward, I'm sure we'll rally to them, but I think ours is a little bit more polished than theirs, just because we have a little bit more time.
And also, there seems to be a couple of schools of thought in talking to the Minister of Business amongst municipal units. Some are prepared to, are interested in partnerships and working as a partner in this whole thing, and have indicated that we probably will be in that camp without having put the question to council, but, and others are, they definitely do not want to be involved in the partnership. Sorry, Deputy Menon.
Generally pretty easy to find out who's on that resolution committee because it is public. I don't think it's illegal to lobby that resolution committee prior to their meetings about the strength of our resolution versus another. So, yeah.
But that,
it's kind of
that still doesn't matter if they approve it, if the committee approve it, you can still have it on the agenda.
Without
their approval, that's all. No. Without only
approved ones go before.
Well, yeah. What about the other counties in the Southwest? Are they saying anything?
I don't know if anybody's been in contact. Have they, Joe?
Certainly.
You would have had the other counties rallied together on especially on the East Link.
Yeah, certainly. I know the municipality of Shelburne have made representations to Eastlink, and the municipality of Annapolis also have talked, I think, made representation to the province about it, and we're talking to them as well about actions they're working on and just sort of comparing notes. So, you know, any partnership opportunities are being explored.
Yeah.
If the motion is passed, and I'm guessing it will be, my suggestion would be that we write to all of the
yes.
Western municipal units and ask for their support in the case.
Yes.
Any further discussion?
Question.
The question is called for. All in favour? It's unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. And that brings, I'll just go down the headings in case somebody has anything they want to raise. Anything on the corporate services?
Nothing on the corporate services, Mayor.
Sure. Anything on the engineering and works?
Oh, no, but Brooklyn has started this week.
Started yesterday morning, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the detours are up now.
Anything on the finance? I guess Bruce is away. Thank you. And anything under recreation, Councilor Frelick?
One small thing, well, not small. Tomorrow night we start our annual concert series at the Astor, and it's our first one. And we've got our summer ambassador on the streets talking it up, and it'd be great if you could share that on your Facebook pages. And we're doing it every second week, and we're hoping to go into the fall, and it's a great partnership with the Astor, so, and a good use of the space, the new space, so.
Good.
Hope to see some people there.
Councillor Fancy.
One other thing, I should have talked to Councillor Farrell about it before, but I've noticed through the papers and things that Sarah Mitten did very well with
Pan Am Games, was it Junior Pan Am Games?
Yeah, she came fourth, I think.
She did.
Is that something that we should give letters of support or something?
Sir, I think Council could direct me to write a letter of congratulation on behalf of Council.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anything else on recreation?
No, I'm good, thank you.
Coming then to planning, a motion has been circulated. Councilor McLeod, would you like to make that motion, please?
Yes, sir. I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality adopt a bylaw respecting amendments to the Region of Queens Municipality Land Use Bylaw, which would see 1. Inserting a definition for pet care services, and 2. Including pet care services in the list of permitted uses in the light industrial bracket M1 bracket zone.
Is there a second of that motion? Councillor Frelick has seconded the motion. Is there a discussion on the motion?
Good, thanks.
I don't think we need any further explanation. Mike, I think we got it earlier. Are you ready for a question? All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Is there anything on the Queen's Place of Mirror that you suddenly would like to bring to our attention? Okay. That brings us then to item 15. Jennifer, do you want to come up here too? Because I know that you're... Yeah, but just in case we have any questions, Richard, the floor is yours.
Okay, so this report is simply an update. In my file, my handover, I understood that there's been a presentation of correspondence to Council regarding renewable to retail regulations and a possible project development that the District of Chester has approached the Region of Queens Municipality on. As by way of brief background, in 2013, renewable to retail market opening was introduced in the 2013 Electricity Reform Act. That was the same act that also changed the framework of efficiency in Nova Scotia. So Nova Scotia Power has been directed under that act to develop a tariff structure for the renewable to retail offering. That's been underway. The information and presentations and comments for that, and the tariff structure will go to the UARB probably in October or November to develop a rate structure to enable organizations or companies to sell renewable electricity to other customers and use the Nova Scotia Power distribution system. There's a couple primary tariffs that will be included in those regulations. There will be a tariff for what's called a spillover rate. So if we're making a spillover rate, a standby rate, and there's also a distribution rate. To deal with the cost of Nova Scotia Power, we'll have to keep coal plants running or their power provided when renewables can't supply. So if I'm a customer and I need to buy electricity, I'll have a rate that I can buy it from if the renewable supplier can't supply. There's also going to be a distribution rate that reflects the stranded asset costs potentially. So it's going to be interesting to see how those tariffs will play out, and that'll be a key component for any viability of a renewable to retail project. The collaboration with the District of Chester at this stage is simply about discussing potential governance. You know, how would something work if the municipalities work together? What would that look like if we work together on a project? What a commercial framework would look like. So how we would act at selling and who we would sell to and all of those things. So very preliminary stages at examining the opportunity. You know, it's interesting in watching the presentation from Watts Wind on, you know, they mentioned the stranded asset, the transmission line that goes to the Port Mercy site. So things that we learned through this collaboration, maybe other projects or other opportunities will emerge for the municipality to consider in the future. So at this stage, we're just continuing to listen, collaborate, discuss. We'll bring back any details as they start coming forward to council for consideration. It'd be much too early right now for us to anticipate whether that's going to look good, great, or maybe not at this point. So mostly about capacity building around some of this interesting energy projects that could be happening around here. I would anticipate that we would be back after the tariff structure is developed, so probably November or December with another update and look for direction.
Just as a reminder, thank you, Richard, just as a reminder to council, the concept was bounced at us by representatives from Minas Energy a while back who made the initial presentation. They are also the ones who then went ahead and made a similar presentation to the mayors and wardens for the South Shore, and that's how things sort of been moving forward. Okay, questions, I'm sorry, in discussion. Councilor McLeod.
Richard, just so that I kind of understand this, so there would be energy supplied through the wind energy, and then it would be, we'd be like a retailer, we would buy it and then resell it to users, is that how this thing works?
Potentially. So
yeah.
If we owned a, if we came into a joint municipal project and we were making a whole bunch of electricity, one of the things we'd have to do is set contracts. So perhaps the municipality would enter into a 20-year contract with that entity to buy power at a flat rate or whatever and have a 20-year power purchase agreement. Or we would sell it in some other way. That's one of the questions. So we would be a producer and a seller.
Absolutely.
Distributed through Nova Scotia Power's lines.
Councilor Waterman.
I think you're going about it the right way. Just kind of watch and kind of be on the other side looking in. But with this other option right here in the county, I think if we invest, I think we should be investing up on the hill.
Chester approached us, of course, and I'm sure that it is their intention to go through with this and put these additional windmills on the site that they have determined to be a kind of a feasible site for them between South Canoe and the Kaiser Meadows. They approached a number of municipalities whom they, you know, they've had contact with. They were looking to form partnerships, yes. We have not in any way let on that we're interested in this partnership. What we're doing right now is kind of educating ourselves on the process. So we're using these discussions to give ourselves more knowledge in this wind energy and the storage of wind energy and what is a feasible site and what is not a viable site for wind energy. We're just kind of using the whole discussion process that we've been invited to attend to kind of educate ourselves on this whole renewable energy process. we're not really entertaining the whole partnership of the municipalities just yet, and us being a retailer and us being an owner and a commercial entity and, you know, and us being an owner of wind turbines. We're just kind of looking to see where the process is leading them and what they have in their minds. And we're looking at these financial models that are being presented to them. And again, using that for our own information purposes as we go forward.
So it's fair to say that we are being
positive
as we go into this. We're not going into it with a negative attitude. We're going in looking for the opportunities because, I'll be right with you, sorry, there are opportunities to generate revenue beyond the tax base.
That's right.
You know, Chester, I heard Alan Weber, who's the warden, I think when they set their tax rate earlier this year, talking about having $1 million in extra revenue over and above the taxes. First of all, they're getting a lot of revenue from South Canoe, but they have their own wind turbine, and that's they're getting several hundred thousand dollars from that. So it's an opportunity we hope it's an opportunity to find a revenue source other than taxation. Sorry, Dr. Mann.
And actually, my words were going to echo yours. So far, it does seem like a good, positive thing to do. It supports the heart of the Wren. You know, that's what we are. We're not ourselves. We are all of us together, and we should work and support all of us together because we'll all grow as we all grow. And if Chester gets the bulk of the fine, if, as long as we make some do. And it's our soul as we go forward, and we need to look at stuff like this.
At the risk of telling stories out of school, and you know I never do that, but Kathleen and Jennifer and I went down to meet Alan Weber and Tammy Wilson to get a better feel for it. And Alan said, well, I'd like to take all 10 windmills myself, but Tammy won't let me. But he sees it as being that big an opportunity. Sorry, who wanted to get in here? Jack, sorry.
Yes, Richard, I think it was a very good point you made out there. There's so many things that are, like the tariffs, what they're all going to be when this is all over. So what actually, because they're going to try to, Nova Scotia Power is going to try to limit, but they want a piece of the pie, as big a piece of pie as they can, so you know what's all going to be at the end. And one thing he mentioned this morning was about, I think a couple of weeks ago, about them reaching a 40% plateau where they only want, Nova Scotia Power only wants to put up 30. And I think if Mascot Falls coming on, if that becomes more, then are we going to start seeing some of these wind turbines shut down for periods of time? So that these are all things that factor into exactly how much profit is going to be there, and it's got to be studied out.
And the type of customers that we might engage might be Queen's Place, the Mirror Center, for example. You know, if you could get cheaper power there, it would be a godsend.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you could sell it to the hospital. Customers like that. Sorry, I'm talking more than that, and I should be.
Good thing.
Any other questions, discussion?
So we don't need a motion.
No, this is
just
yes, we need a motion that we can continue to explore this.
But there's not one prepared.
We're just going forward with discussion.
Okay.
Because I do know that some of the councils, Bridgewater for example, have moved that they continue in the discussion. As direction to from council, we will continue to discuss. We will not make any decisions without him coming back here and discussing it in the public forum, and so on. We'll continue to keep everybody briefed as we go forward. Now I'm going to deviate from normal practice because there were two or three questions from the public gallery that I said, well, wait until we get into the discussion and you'll see if we answer them. Have we answered your questions that you raised, Mr. Cox?
Mr. Mayor, I guess from what I've heard so far, that we're not being asked to make an equity investment in this. They're just looking for
not yet,
customers to buy what they're already producing.
No, there will be, if this goes ahead, and if we like, if all of the
ducks,
I'm not going to use that, all of the ducks get in a row, but if everything comes together,
we buy a windmill.
There will be an investment of, I think it's $1 million per unit. So say the region of Queens says, we like this, we like two, we would like to take two turbines. $2 million we would borrow as part of the financing for this project. You may laugh, but the thing... Jennifer, behave yourself. Get her under control.
$6 million for turbine.
How much?
$2 million
a turbine.
Six.
Whatever.
Just here. Remember it's
here. So yes, there would be. The point is, there would be an investment, and we would borrow money if everything came right. But that's the investigation that we're going to continue on.
So we would be part of the ownership of the turbine.
We would own one.
Yes.
If that's the route we go.
Yes.
Yes.
Get her under control, Richard. Yes. Okay. Did I answer your did we answer your question?
She is.
Leon.
Everyone else.
I take it from the discussion here is that the announcement in the paper this morning with respect to the province, it had no real effect here. They'd be able to go ahead.
Not yet.
The termination of the confits doesn't directly impact this project. Right?
That's right. So the confit rate, so there's going to be a new tariff structure that's going to come out that this will work in. The confit rate was obviously a higher rate to encourage the creation of renewables. There's no benefit rate for retail to renewable. We have to compete, you know, the producers would have to compete with the existing rate.
Not a government.
So therefore, the province wouldn't be putting incentives into
this. No incentives, that's right.
And they wouldn't guarantee us the incentives in the 20-year agreements anyway.
David, do you have any more questions? I know you asked specifically about investing outside Queens. Do you have any?
I have plenty of questions, but I won't ask today.
Okay, fine. Okay, anybody else have any other points on this issue? Okay, where are we at? Canada 150 funds is on the agenda. We had asked people to think about how we might participate. We've circulated the information. Are you ready sometime? Or maybe I don't know, is there a deadline, Norm, as to when we can apply for the funds?
Half a year. It takes half a year. And it's a thing that says it takes half a year from the time you apply to when you actually get your money and get approved. So.
The staff have been meeting. We'd like to bring a report with some more information, some recommendations.
So when do you think you'll be doing that?
We'll have it, if not the first meeting in September, it'll be the second. We've got the draft.
Okay, so we'll have a report from staff in September.
Yeah. And what's good about this is you can get 100% funding, though they like you, they really don't want to give out 100%. And there could be a lot of good projects. Because you don't have to apply for one, you could, but it's about public participation and do good things. So I hope staff are thinking countywide and be interesting to see.
I just wanted to also echo what Darlene's saying, that I know there's a couple people that have started already, and I've sent them the information a while ago, and they have big projects they're looking at, and it's a project that I've been interested in before, so it's really good at this point to get the public involved because they have some great ideas. Great.
Yeah, I think I said when I threw this out last meeting that maybe a way of going would be to have a committee of people from throughout the region of Queens, which is my personal prejudice. But so we'll be talking about it in September then. Okay, yes, Councilor Waterman.
So this is the year 2017.
17.
That's the
150th anniversary, that's why it's called. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe we could blend there a little bit, right on the both meetings here.
Well, that's what they're both
saying. Oh, that's what they're talking about.
You
I'd ask you to speak up because I'm as deaf as a haddock without my hearing aids.
Maybe we could blend some of this together with, I think Harry's Canada gets involved in some of this stuff too. So maybe we could make a blend out on that end and put them both together and have a,
Okay.
We have a representative.
Yeah, and we'll get the Board of Trade involved and
half a year.
Okay, anything else on the, that anybody else like to bring forward?
From the time you apply.
If not, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. We've completed the agenda. We are adjourned.
No in camera. Good. Think of something.